Well, hello and welcome to the studios of Bedford Community Television. My name is Ray Chadwick. I'm the host today on Candidates Corner. This show, along with the others we've done, gives our viewers the opportunity to get acquainted with the people they'll see on the general election ballot on November 8th. And this year we have the Republican gubernatorial nominee, Chris Sununu, with us. Chris, how are you doing?
Ray,
thank
I'm
you
doing
for
great.
Stopping in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you're done with the primary.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I can imagine. That was quite a field, you know.
It was.
Successful business people, successful mayors, successful
it was a great
senators.
Field.
What a great group. You must feel proud and humble to have gotten through it.
You hit it right there. I'm very proud to obviously have come through and to earn the support and confidence of the Republican Party, those independents who came on board with us. That was great. But to your point, when you have guys like Frank Edelblut and Ted Gatzis and Senator Jeanne Forster, great people, all a little bit different.
Yeah.
I think we're very similar in a lot of our philosophical approach to where we want to take the state.
Exactly.
Those fundamental ideals of low taxes, limited government, local control, individual responsibility. These are the things that make us that live free or die state. And so there was obviously a lot we can agree on. It's never easy running against your friends.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true,
and
isn't
I think,
it?
And I think I can speak for them as well as myself. You know, you're kind of picking on the nuances a little bit, but it's important so you can define yourself. There were key issues that we differed on. But again, the day after the primary, the fact that they all came out, galvanized behind me, you know, it was a very tight race between Frank and myself. And let me just say, Frank Edelblut was a terrific candidate. And,
he was.
And people say
indeed.
That they were surprised by it. I wasn't. Frank really earned it. He did. He went grassroots, person to person. He really talked about the issues. He stayed positive. Right, and that's something that we've really tried to do as strong as we could. Stay positive and optimistic, energetic. Give people something to vote into.
Right.
Unlike what we're seeing on the national level, which is, gee, what is the people use the term lesser of two evils or all that kind of stuff. There's just a lot of negativity there. We're different here in New Hampshire, and again, I think that our primary process on the Republican side was a very positive thing, obviously easy for me to say as I won, but the fact that they've all galvanized, they've all been helping me out, it's a great message, not just for Republicans, but for independents and conservative Democrats, that we have a vision for the state and we're driving forward.
And the others are saying the same thing. I mean, you mentioned Frank because he was the one that gave you the closest run for the nomination. But I've known Frank for several years, back when I was a county chairman, and he helped with town committees and things. So Frank is a focused kind of guy. He believes in making a difference and, you know, making New Hampshire a better place to live, better place to be a homeowner, better place to raise children, all of these things. So it's a good thing. I think the big thing that many people keep talking about is what is called the heroin crisis, which in my opinion is sort of a overbroad construct, because there's a whole series of things feeding into what we call a crisis. Cheap availability of drugs, lax enforcement of prescriptions, I think to a certain extent lacks supervision of people, children, for example, and get into this. What do you think are the key issues here?
Well, you've hit on some of them there. And
that was
again,
sort of the primer,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. I mean, my approach to the heroin crisis is there's a couple key things. Number one, the state has not done enough. This administration has failed on this heroin crisis. The fact, and the proof is unfortunately in the disastrous numbers. Year after year, not just the last couple, but when you go back the last 10 years, the numbers keep increasing. The numbers of deaths, the numbers of families torn apart by this crisis. So we haven't been ahead of this like we should have. We have a governor that didn't know she was given a $12 million grant to fight
this
issue.
That's just amazing to me.
It's shocking.
Is a hot topic.
It's complete mismanagement of one of the most critical issues our state is dealing with. And my opponent wants to keep, you know, champions what the governor has done, champions the fact that her drug czar was such a disaster. So I'm an engineer by trade. You know, I'm an environmental engineer.
Right.
And one thing I do know is you cannot keep going down the same path and expect the system to change.
Right.
So I'm trying to bring that change. Aggressive prevention in schools. My son was in the fifth grade last year, part of the DARE program. And he will likely be offered drugs and pills, marijuana, whatever it might be in the next few years. Those are hard conversations, right, as a parent to have sometimes. I think we all know that. But it's a reality. We have to be aggressive about it.
It's a conversation that has to be had.
It has to be had. So my program...
You know, that is part of the issue
to
whether or not, you know, parents take an interest in this thing and take an interest in guiding their children around these threats.
So many parents don't know the tools and resources available to them. They know there's a heroin crisis out there. They know it has to do with pills and opioids. But they're not quite sure if something were to happen to a loved one or they saw their child.
Right.
So my program gets aggressive with funding our DARE program. I mean, last year my son talked about smoking and drinking. Well, that's all fine and good, but let's get serious about what it is. He's going into middle school. These serious drugs are coming to him. My program says not only are we going to get aggressive with the kids and their prevention program, my program brings the parents in so they can learn the warning signs, what's available, what are the tools and resources, who do you call, what do you do, you know, if you think a loved one might be in trouble. We do the same thing for employers in high-risk job areas, food and beverage, construction. These are the areas of workforce where we have a high prevalence. So I want to make sure the employers know what to do if an employee comes to them. Mm-hmm. Transparency and prescription programs. So whatever the prescription drug company is teaching the doctors about prescription methods and recommendations, that information has to be immediately and readily, easily available to the consumer. E-prescriptions, right? Let's get rid of some of the fraud that we have with the handwritten prescriptions. I think we have to start phasing those out and getting more to e-prescriptions so there's a checks and balance in the system. And then, obviously, Granite Hammer, right? Making sure those on the front lines that are putting themselves at risk every day really have the tools and resources and the funding. Mm-hmm. We need to get aggressive with recruitment. We don't have enough police officers on the front lines right now. We simply don't. And over the long term, when you look 2, 5, 10 years down the road, we're going to have a tough time recruiting to make sure we have those officers. And we need to promote ourselves and make sure we're doing everything we can in all aspects of this crisis. The current administration has failed. There's just no question about that. I want to bring a change to New Hampshire for the better.
Now, you've had the experience of dealing with this in your business.
Oh, sure.
So the issue of people getting... I guess captured is probably the right word into this addiction, and the downward spiral in life and prospects is immediate.
We have 800 employees up at Waterville Valley in all different facets, all different parts of the season, part-time, full-time, year-round, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we're up in the North Country, right? We don't have, in the mountains, we don't have a lot of the resources that we do down here in Manchester and Salem and Nashua. We don't have as many, simply as many resources. Mm-hmm. So we have to understand and have a governor that understands whatever the issue of the day is, whether you're talking about education or substance abuse, we need a governor that understands that while we are a small state, we are very regionally diverse. What is happening on the seacoast is very different than Manchester.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very different than what's going on in Claremont and maybe the west part of the state, and a whole world different what's happening in the North Country. Whatever we're doing in Concord, we have to understand that those policies have effect on people's lives, and we have to have a governor that understands all the different demographic regions of our state to make sure we're making the best decisions for everybody, not just a small population.
Exactly right. Yeah. And I think the experience you've got as a businessman, and I'm an engineer too, so I understand logical progression of arguments and, you know, how to investigate things. So I think that's going to be very beneficial. I find it remarkable, frankly, that our current governor, when she started out, was proposing that she should have a chief operating officer.
Oh, my gosh.
Wasn't that amazing?
Remember that? The governor is going to hire a chief operating officer in this state, also known as the governor.
The governor, right. Exactly.
Let's hire someone to do her job for her. That was outrageous.
Yeah, and it was pretty demonstrative as to exactly the degree of commitment she had to this, other than, I guess, one could argue as a stepping stone to something else.
Yeah, look, I've been very clear. I'm not running for anything else after governor. I'm not going to Washington. I have no interest in that. Look, I'm a manager, right? I was an engineer for about 10 years and on the environmental side. I run my business now. I have a responsibility of 800 employees. And, you know, when you've had I've been up at night, right? And you worry about making sure you're going to hit payroll, not just next month, but next year.
Right, getting the revenue. Or not enough snow.
Right, not enough snow. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge dynamic. We say it kind of tongue-in-cheek, but that is the weather and the anxiety of that is a huge dynamic in the businesses all across the North Country.
Right.
From the mom-and-pop bed and breakfast, the restaurants, ski areas like myself, snowmobiling, which is a booming industry.
Corner stores.
Cross-country skiing, right? These are things, and my opponent in last week's debate showed an absolute ignorance of business north of Concord when he implied that he clearly didn't understand why we all had a tough season last year. It didn't snow, right?
Exactly.
But there are real dynamics. Now, I managed my business very well, and my team deserves a lot of credit. They did a great job, and in fact, so great. We're the only mountain expanding this coming year. Mm. We've invested another $2 million. We've bought workforce housing. We're growing. So our the proof in terms of our success is there. Other folks didn't have as good of a year.
Right.
And other folks didn't have some of the resources available to them. And we have to be very, very cognizant of that and making sure we're paying attention. There's a lot of people in the state that are north of Concord. They have a lot of variables, different variables than what comes out of Concord or that area. And again, having a governor that appreciates that, that understands that, that is willing to talk to them one-on-one and really understand the issues and variables because I'm living them every day.
Sure.
Right? Healthcare costs. I've been up at, again.
Glad you got to that because I was
going
to bring it up
anyway. And I don't mean to go on.
I figured you might have jumped on it.
It's a real issue. It's a real issue. Obamacare has failed. There's no doubt about that. In the fact that
it's becoming more and more obvious every day.
When you have 70,000 people in the state still uninsured, right? Mm-hmm. That promise did not come through. The healthcare costs for individuals are skyrocketing. We all know that. Everyone is seeing their bills, right? The healthcare exchange, incredibly expensive. Mm-hmm. These are the promises that were made on this giant piece of legislation out of Washington that have failed our state and failed our country. Right. I simply want to design a system with New Hampshire people in mind, a system that works for us. Because what our needs are very different than California or Mississippi or New York or even Massachusetts.
True.
We need a governor that understands by doing it the New Hampshire way, we're going to do it better than everyone else and bring the best and brightest in. There's no politics involved. Mm. Just putting the best and brightest people in the room, driving forward on their ideas and designing a system that fits our needs. And you can say that about healthcare. We can do that for education. Again, instead of letting this giant Common Core program come in and just take away the control we have of our classrooms, the autonomy that parents have, the school choice issue that parents need to retain, the flexibility we need to give to teachers so they can do what they do best, design the best programs for their kids in their classrooms. Bureaucrats in Washington don't understand that. Bureaucrats in Washington don't really have our best interest in mind.
No, so they have their best interest.
Oh, of course they do. Of course they do.
Of course.
And again, we have an incredibly responsive government here, right? Mm-hmm. We get elected every 2 years. We have this large legislature, which gives a real power to people.
Yeah.
Right? That's a beauty that we have. Why give that away to Washington? Right? That's our asset. Mm-hmm. We need to understand you utilize your assets to the best of their ability. And to that end, we need to make sure the power stays with the parents and the people. Not, I think my opponent proposed keeping the funding and control of schools in the courts last week. Even the Democrat governors of the past didn't want to do that. He's gone to a completely unknown level now, saying that the court should dictate our funding. The legislature should dictate the funding.
I don't think so.
The people should dictate the funding. That's how you do things the New Hampshire way.
Exactly. I mean, it's the job of the legislature to appropriate money. Let's talk
about
another.
And if they're not doing the job, you can get rid of them.
Well, that's right.
It's an amazing
process. In 2 years,
process.
You can just say adios.
Right. They're held accountable.
One of the other issues, and you know this because you're in the business of creating snow, which involves pumps and involves spray guns, the cost of electricity. What do we got? What are your thoughts on how we deal with that? Because
that's one of the big inhibitors
of business in this state.
I spent $1.2 million on electricity a couple years ago. $1.2 million.
How many skier starts did you have?
I'm sorry?
How many skier starts did you have?
Skier visits?
Yeah.
That year, probably maybe 175,000, something like that.
So $10.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. No, it was well over 10% of my gross revenues.
Right.
It's unbelievable. It's unsustainable.
But just let me get this right. You said 1.2 million and about 120,000 skiers.
About 150. Let's call it 150.
Okay.
I mean, I'm trying to think of the year, about 150,
it's still 170. Close to $10 per skier.
That's
in the lift ticket.
That's right. That's
I mean, that puts
it into
focus, as they say.
You know, when you see companies like Ruger or Foss or BE or others, these are great New Hampshire companies.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing their expansion projects out of state.
Right.
It's because of healthcare. It's because of energy. And now, again,
also the regulatory environment.
The regulatory environment,
opinion.
All these things come into play. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm dealing with those just like they are. Now, I can't pick up my mountain and move it, nor would I want to.
Yeah,
but,
true.
But these are dynamics that a lot of us who do want to be here have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I understand it from a first order perspective.
Sure.
Why would we elect some political operative to sit in the corner office that only thinks of things from the political side of it, as opposed to the business side, the people side, the side that says what we're going to do in Concord affecting the individual? In terms of energy, we need a broad policy here. We need to address how are we going to increase base load generation? How are we going to get more electrons into the system, right? Because that will start reducing costs. Whether it's a better variety of renewable energy, which I'm a big fan of, whether it's solar or wind or hydro, I've supported all these kind of projects. Bad projects I've said no to, right? Yeah. Bad renewable projects. You know what the benefit of saying no to a bad renewable project is you have more money to invest in the good,
good ones right.
that are more efficient, that work better for people. And
yeah,
again,
but these all ought to be prevail or not on the basis of how competitive they are in the marketplace,
on an
as
economic
opposed
basis,
to a bunch of bureaucrats saying, "Oh, I think I'll put the money into this."
It's political.
Or
at this point.
This business who happens to be tied in to this.
That's exactly right. It has gotten very political, but you have to look at it from an economic, social, environmental benefit. I used to design these systems. I have more experience with renewable energy than any governor in history, frankly. Mm. So to have that expertise in the corner office just makes sure we're using discernment and better judgment, and we can really make the best decisions for the people.
Right.
Do we need more natural gas into New England? There's no doubt
sure.
about it. But we need to do it the New Hampshire way. This last pipeline came in, they tried to just drop the pipeline on the state. Mm. No way. Mm-hmm. As a governor, I'll go in town by town, person to person, you know, and say, what do you guys need to see? What are your concerns?
Right.
And then we'll design a plan around those concerns, listening to the individuals, listening to the towns, listening to the communities that are going to really be affected by it. We need to get these projects done, but they have to be done the New Hampshire way.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one of the things of the Articles of the Constitution, I keep thinking of the 10th Amendment, that states' rights.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about how you see that too, you know, because I keep seeing this overreaching federal bureaucracy that's got its fingers into everything from my favorite, well, actually not a favorite, but the most horrific one. They now control school lunches.
Yeah.
Out of Oklahoma City. And I'm going, oh, really? Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know we needed that help.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had a couple towns here in New Hampshire push back on that federal program.
Yes,
God bless
correct.
Them. Yeah. I think I might be speaking out here. I think maybe even
Londonderry.
Yep, Londonderry
did.
There might be a couple others. So, again, you know, I'm a big believer. You know, we have our 68 hours of hunger issue in this country and in the state, where a lot of times children go 68 hours between Friday and Monday from getting a viable meal. And so having a viable lunch in our schools is important. But you got to make sure it's something they're going to eat. They're, you know, you can't have the federal government importing what they think is the right solution on the locals. They don't know what parents are looking for. They don't know what school districts are looking for, what the costs are, what the benefits are. So, again, it's about having local districts design their own systems the way they need to, because they're the ones listening to their parents. They're the ones that are hearing the concerns of the, if I may, the customer, the consumer, the families that are really impacted by this bureaucracy. Again, my opponent just wants to keep taking these programs in from Washington. It's very, very easy to manage when you're letting someone else do all the work, and that someone else doesn't even know anything about New Hampshire, does not have our interests in mind. And frankly, when it comes to Washington, I just don't trust them. I don't. I want to bring change to New Hampshire and push back on those type of big programs, because, by the way, my opponent has no way to pay for them. Right, because they always come with big subsidies. He wants to make them permanent, which gives away all our control. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there can be good aspects of programs that come out, and I think a lot of Washington programs may be well-intentioned. Well, but when they're not designed around our system and what our needs are, the unintended consequences can be really disastrous in terms of making sure the power remains with the people, making sure the decisions remain with the moms and dads and families for themselves. Whether you're talking about health care, education, the substance abuse crisis, we need to control our own destiny in these issues. We need to have the final input and the final say.
Well, I think that's the way to make a successful organization. My experience in the business world was in large companies, and there was this idea of delayering, the number of layers of management between the person doing the work and the person totally in charge. And the other thing, the further you get away from the customer, so like if you're running a family pizza parlor and something's awry with the way you're doing it, you hear about it like that. But if you're now something like Washington, where you're two or three or four layers away from the actual individuals getting the service or needing the service, the consequence is it's never as good, and it's as responsive as it needs to be.
That's right. So. You know, you bring up an interesting point when you talk about layering. I look at economic development in the state. We have a DRED, Department of Resource and Economic Development.
Isn't that good? Who came up with that acronym?
I don't
know. Do you have any idea?
I don't know.
Will you fire them? Can you fire them, please?
Well, we're going to change it under because I can tell you what. They run parks, they run forestry, and they run the economic development program in the state.
Which
one of these things is not like
focus.
The others.
That's sorry.
Right.
You know.
And so you have the Division of Economic Development buried with Parks and Forestry. And Parks and Forestry does a great job.
Yeah, right.
Phil Bryce runs our parks. I think he does a good job. And the folks that run forestry, is it Brad? I think maybe he runs forestry now. But when you have the Department of Economic Development, I'm going to bring that out and make it directly reportable to the governor. Because that's one of the most important things a governor can do is drive economic development.
Sure.
And something our governor has done absolutely none of.
Took a trip to Turkey, didn't she?
Good Lord. the trip to Turkey. When was the last time we brought a major business into the state, right?
Well, the problem is they're actually going the other way, Ruger being one.
Ruger? We just lost 600 jobs in Salem with the financial services
group that just left.
We just heard of 450 people potentially being laid off at Dartmouth-Hitchcock amongst a mental health crisis that is also completely mismanaged and out of control by this governor's office. I don't want to harp on the negative. I try to stay optimistic and positive. But the realities are we are losing business.
Well, you have to learn from mistakes.
That's
Otherwise,
right.
they keep being made.
That's right.
And I think the key to this whole thing, the other issue we've got going on in the state is we now have a median age higher than Florida. Mm-hmm. And the reason, part of the reason, I should say, is because young people can't find jobs here, so they migrate out. Both of my kids have done it, so we need to find a way.
That's right. We call it the silvering. I don't like to call it the graying. The silvering
now,
of the
now.
State. It's not a negative.
Silvering,
a lot of people
like
talk
that.
About it like a negative. It's not, but it is a changing dynamic in our system that we have to address.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
To your point, one of the biggest issues we have is our young workforce is leaving in droves, right? We have done nothing to incentivize them to stay. One of the many parts of my plan, as an example, would be if you go to the university system here in New Hampshire, which we know is expensive, and our students unfortunately graduate with a very high debt load, which is a driver for them leaving the state. They're looking for those higher paying jobs. So why don't we find those high demand job areas, if you will, teachers, nurses, clinicians, psychiatry, whatever it might be. And as you stay and work in the state after you graduate, we'll help pay down your student debt. I don't believe in free college. I think that's a disastrous idea,
mistake by
the Democrats, because that would completely destroy the fabric of our own university system to hand it over to Washington, D.C. That makes no sense, to any of us. But we do have to incentivize our young folks to stay here. So we can fill jobs, help pay down their student debt, retain them. And also as a state, we need to promote what we're doing here in the state for a younger workforce.
Right.
When businesses are looking to come into our state, they're saying, what are you doing? How are you investing in a workforce that they need to rely on in the future? We need to make those changes, make those investments, and promote them. And that will help drive more business in here as well, because when you're making the investment, that's what they want to see, that you're a partner in their future.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
exactly.
I can bring to the corner office, that type of real business experience, understanding what those needs are, and driving forward.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it needs, frankly, because the New Hampshire advantage has been slowly frittered away.
Sure.
Even during my time here,
absolutely.
And I'm not a long timer compared to some people. And, you know, the good old days where it used to be a clearly low-tax environment, clearly government close to the people, clearly better on all steps. It's really not there
anymore. We've
erased
it. We've unfortunately, the most recent governors, and especially Governor Hassan, has really erased that advantage. Local control, I always think, is a big part of that advantage, because again, that just allows us to have a lot of impact on the system and making the best choices for our families and individuals.
I think one of the criticisms that is often brought about Republicans is you only care about business, you only care about entrepreneurs, you don't care about the people. And I guess I'm going to cue this up, but I like your opinion because it seems to me fundamentally, if you can't have an environment where people can find jobs, can find self-worth, can find an opportunity to grow their assets, then all the rest of it is
it's all
is
about the
shame.
Individual.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about business because it's about the employees. It's about the high-paying jobs, the quality jobs, the quality of life.
Yep.
That those a family, your quality of life is very much defined by the job you have, your occupation, your future, your security for your family.
Right.
So that's why we talk about jobs so often. That's why we talk about driving jobs in here, making sure we increase the pay. You know, I go back to also when we talk about quality of life, I think a lot about those on the lower income scale or those on the elderly on fixed incomes.
Right.
When we have things like our high energy costs here, or we're doing things when we put a lot of financial burden down on the towns, which I think we need to, the state has to pull back and actually commit to some of those obligations we've made. With our high property tax structure here, we're not providing the financial flexibility for those who don't have a whole lot of means that they need in their lives to stay here, remain in their homes, and give them a real quality of life that we've grown accustomed to here in New Hampshire. So, again, whether it's the low-income folks or those on fixed incomes maybe it's the seniors or elderly, we have to make sure we're providing the right resources for them and the right flexibility in their lives so they can live the best quality of life and get out of their way. They shouldn't be worrying about government every day. They shouldn't be worrying about their bills every day. Those are the kind of real solutions I know we can bring to the table. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to come from Washington, D.C. Yeah. And it's not going to come from a career politician like Colin Van Ostern or a career political operative, that's very good at spinning his message. That's what he does for a living. It's really about results. It's about operational results. Why did Governor Hassan want to hire a chief operational officer?
Because she knew she couldn't worry about the results.
She couldn't do the job herself. She was admitting failure right there. I'm a manager. Yeah. Right? And whether it's my business or my family or what I do day to day in the executive council, these are the things this is the type of experience that we need in the corner office. Real experience, one on one, so we can have a conversation. Yeah. And again, it's not about being a Republican or a Democrat. It's just about someone who knows how to bring the best people together and really provide the best solutions for everybody in the state.
Well, I think that's another reason why the Republicans tend to focus on the business side, because you can't really hide the mistakes.
Yeah.
You have to fix them.
That's right.
As opposed to sometimes in the political world, you can, if you tell the right story, you can sort of
skate a spin.
Exactly.
Skating past, they're spinning, they're just blasting out a headline, whether it's true or not, hoping it connects with a voter, because they're pandering for voters. Mm-hmm. They're not operating for the people. That's the difference.
That's well put.
And that's what we see.
Nicely done.
We're seeing it on the national level, and we're seeing it with my opponent. They're great at pandering to voters. They're great at telling you what you want to hear.
Yeah.
But when they get to office, they do something completely different because they don't know how to operate.
Right.
They don't know how to make the best impacts for the individuals. And you brought up a great point. It's not just about business. It's not about me and my business, but it's about my employees and their families and providing them the best resources so they can have the best quality of life.
Yeah, can't have business without reasonably happy employees.
Absolutely.
Chris, we're almost out of time. This has blazed right on by. We
can
keep on going for a while.
I think you brought up a lot of really key issues here. These are the things, these are issues that matter.
Yeah.
My opponent never wants to talk about issues. He keeps avoiding debates with me left and right. I trapped him. I got him into a debate last week. But he avoids talking about these issues. Yeah. So these types of mediums are great just to get
I'm glad we have this available to you. And you have just about a minute left. So why don't you make your pitch directly to the voters?
Oh, sure. No, I appreciate that. And again, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure.
At the end of the day, this election, it's a very clear decision. It really is. We can keep going down the path of big Washington programs that, frankly, we can't afford, programs that are not in our best interest, whether you're talking about health care or education, whatever it is. I believe in the New Hampshire way. I believe in that New Hampshire advantage where local control, designing our own systems, making the choices for ourselves, and really bringing the experience as an environmental engineer, as a business owner with 800 employees, that type of real-world, first-order stakeholder experience into the corner office. That's how we're going to make the best choices for the people in New Hampshire. Again, we can keep going down the path of big Washington programs, or New Hampshire can stand up and say, we want to make the change. And we do believe, as I do, that when New Hampshire people do it New Hampshire's way, we do it better than everybody else. I believe that in my heart of hearts. I hope to earn folks' support. Check out my website, chrissonuna.com. Give me a call. Send me an email. Let me know what the issues are that are important to you. And over the next couple of years, we'll take all that input and make sure we're listening to the people in New Hampshire and driving on the best solutions. Thanks
Excellent.
So much, Ray.
Nice summary. Thank you very much, sir.
Anytime.
Okay.
Appreciate
and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching. Don't forget to vote on November 8th and make your vote count. Have a good day.